Why would you use it, now that we have Title VII? Why would you use that? What if someone comes into your office and says, well, I wasn't hired, I think it's because I'm black. I saw they hired white men with far less qualifications than I have. And I say, well, when did it happen? Oh, 2 years ago. Title VII, you're out of luck. So do you have any other recourse for this person? Section 1981 has a 3-year statute of limitations, tort statute. It will be recognized by the courts today. You don't have to go to make an administrative claim first. You can go straight into court. So next, I want to just give you a little bit about laws incident to termination. And that's the second part of my outline. And we talked about some of this yesterday. First is COBRA. COBRA is Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1985, and it's the federal law that allows people to continue to buy health insurance after they have been terminated in the group plan at the group plan rate. It's an effort to help people out when they're unemployed, that they don't have a gap in their health insurance. It gives you 18 months of coverage. If you ever have an employee in this situation, I think we talked about this in our third hypothetical yesterday, there was no COBRA notice in the packet that Pauline got when she was terminated. A lot of employers will at least say something. They'll say, you will receive notice from the insurer, because there's this dance that gets played where the employer has to notify the insurer, they have 14 days to do that. And then the insurer has, I think, 30 days to notify the employee of their rights. And then the employee has a 60-day period to decide whether they want to buy the COBRA, and they have 45 days to pay. So before it's all done, you're paying much, maybe months after your insurance appears to have been terminated, but it's all paid in arrears. And I have so many people who come to me and say, I went to the doctor, I was terminated, I went to the doctor, they wouldn't take my insurance, what am I going to do, I'm going to get billed for this. And the answer is, you'll get billed, but your insurance eventually will reimburse you. The best advice I would give employers is to let people know that this is going to happen, so that they don't become terrified. The next is the Older Workers Benefit Protection Act. Now this goes together with age discrimination. Under 151B or under the age discrimination in employment. And this arose because employers were making a habit, or there were reports to Congress that employers were making a habit, of going up to employees, taking them into a room, saying, you're terminated today. Here's a severance offer. You can have 2 weeks' pay if you sign today. If you don't sign today, you're not going to get any severance. Goodbye. And people were pressured, didn't have sufficient time to think about what was going on, to analyze whether they had any claims before signing a release of claims. And so Congress passed this statute. And what it says is, this is sort of the minimum that must happen in order for a release of the ADEA to be valid. Release and any other sections of the agreement must be written in plain language understandable to a lay person. It must refer to the ADEA specifically. It may not waive any future claims. It must give something of value to the person to which they are not already entitled. So for example, if it's their vacation pay, which has to be paid out anyway, you can't say you're getting vacation pay, so sign this release. The person must be advised to see an attorney, and perhaps most importantly, the person must be given a minimum of 21 days, or if this is a mass layoff, 45 days, to think about whether to sign. And then after they sign, they must be given 7 days to change their mind, to revoke their signature. And they must be given what we talked about yesterday, a list of everyone who's being laid off, their position, and their age. So the person can analyze if there's a negative impact on the basis of age of this particular employer action. This has come to be sort of a best practices guide to all releases, even when the ADEA is not involved, even for people under the age of 40. Now, what the courts have said, you know, what, how strictly will we enforce this? Suppose the release follows all these guidelines, with the exception that it doesn't say to go see a lawyer, for example. Any omission of any of those particular points is deemed material, so that someone can take the money that's offered as severance, can sign, and can then sue. And when they sue, they will not have to return the money because the release was in effect. So it's strictly enforced, and most employers have abided by its terms. Okay, finally, just a couple points about taxes, since we're talking about releases and severance. Any kind of severance pay will be taxed as wages and will be reported on a 1099, I'm sorry, on a W-2 form with Medicare and Social Security taxes taken out. Any other sorts of severance, such as for agreed compensation for emotional distress or other consequential damages, must be reported on a 1099. It's all taxable, including the attorney's fees and the attorney's fees. For those of us who look to litigation, the attorney's fees, whether by settlement, let's just talk about settlement or severance, that's part of an agreement, are not are reportable both to the lawyer and to the employee, but the employee is able to deduct that amount from the severance and from their other income that year, so they're not double taxed on it. This happens more in the context of, let's say, a settlement agreement where the attorney's fees is a big chunk, let's say. Suppose there's a settlement where the person gets back pay of $100,000 and attorney's fees of $200,000. It would be unfair for that employee to have to pay tax on what the lawyer ended up getting. And what the IRS has, or what the statute says, is the whole $300 gets reported, but then the $200 gets deducted above the line, so that the person's taxable income is only the $100 that they get. That's a little complicated. We tell all our clients that to get independent tax advice, but we want them to know that they're not going to be taxed for what we get as attorney's fees.